Jane Oates is the president of Working Nation. WorkingNation.com is the website. Jane's been with us before, and we're glad you're there again. Hi, Jane.
Hi, John. Yeah, you know I love every chance to talk to you.
You always say that, but you say that to all the boys, don't you?
I don't. I do not. I am very discriminated.
Folks are going back to work. I think the question is where they are working these days as much as what they're doing. Let's start there. Talk to me about the nature of the work residence these days.
You know, the sectors that are having the most popular return, of course, are the ones that people are sure of, healthcare. You know, I would say people are going into various kinds of healthcare. And I hope you're seeing this in Chicago. Nationally, we're seeing lots of additional interest in teaching. You know, I think COVID showed everybody how important the teacher in your life is. And I think it really inspired a lot of people to go back and get certification, even if they had a degree that was not as a teacher. So I think both of those are really very positive signs. We need good healthcare workers, and we certainly need terrific teachers.
How are those jobs paying?
You know, look, the teaching job, quite frankly, pays pretty well as entry level. What it doesn't do is it doesn't keep up in terms of job mobility. Most contracts raise salaries a few percent a year, you know, and it's hard for teachers. Many teachers will tell you, you know, I'm a recovering teacher. I've confessed on your show before. Always work a second job, whether that job is in the summer or whether that job is, you know, in the evenings or weekends. But as more, you know, I don't know whether you noticed that the Los Angeles teachers just signed a new contract, and they're going to go to 12-month school. And I think that's going to be a real movement across the country as we deal with this learning loss. You know, we recognized it during COVID, but we have learning loss for so many kids every September or August when they come back to school.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just hope that when districts, if they move to this, they make sure they compensate these teachers for 12 months, because they've all been getting away with paying low wages because they say, oh, they only work 9 months a year.
What about the rest
of
us? Let
them do that job one day.
Yeah, no, listen, I know them's fighting words when somebody says that. Let's just talk about the rest of the work world, that is, people who have been able to work at home. What's going on with hybrid work at home or work in the office?
So the interesting thing, John, and this really has come to be since we spoke last, is that employers are struggling with what do they give to those workers who can't work remotely? You know, those workers that have to be there because they're starting to make noise. You know, the white collar workers in our business can work in a hybrid situation or fully remote, but I don't have that kind of job, so I don't have any flexibility. So I'm waiting to see in the next few months exactly how employers respond to that. But I do think, you know, the idea of completely remote is diminishing and hybrid is coming much more into the vernacular of everybody. Yeah. You know, you hear people, you know, everybody can take off, they work remotely Friday. People can work in the office 3 days a week and choose their other 2 days, but they must be in for meetings. You're starting to hear a lot more of that.
If the employer determines that it's better for him and the company to have the employee in the office, but they don't want to lose employees by mandating that, how about this idea? If you do come in, you get a bonus. Like, whatever your salary is, we're going to give you an extra, pick a number, every day you come in or for every hour you're in the office. And by the way, that's not, I don't think, so crazy, because the people who are working from home are saving money on gas. They're saving money on a whole host of other considerations, like maybe childcare. So they're coming out financially ahead by staying at home. Maybe you incentivize people, you level the playing field by saying, but if you do come in or if you have to come in, we're going to give you a little something extra. What do you think of that?
I think it's a great idea. And, you know, some employers have started that, not giving it as a bonus, but paying for parking. I mean, it's always amazing to me that the highest paid people get free parking and the people who really need the help don't get it. So they're giving free parking. They're paying transpasses. They're, you know, where they have public transportation. But I really like your idea. I think giving a clear bonus for being willing to come back to work is something that would be important.
Hey, John Williams, don't give them a bonus for coming in. pay them less if they don't come in. how about that,
you know,
Jane?
You always have the best readers.
We do.
I mean, your listeners get right back to you about things. You have an amazing audience, my friend.
That's nice of you to say. I think we do. But we're visiting with Jane Oates right now, the president at Working Nation. And the idea I floated a moment ago was to incentivize people, pay them a little more, because the people staying at home, to incentivize people to come into the office, the folks staying at home are financially coming out ahead rather than bonus them, says 630, subtract from the other people. But that's probably not going to work, because isn't the feeling that if you don't accommodate these hybrid wannabes, they'll go somewhere else, Jane?
Well, the somewhere else's are getting tighter and tighter, John, as we know. So it's going to be really interesting. Every economy expands and contracts. And when this one contracts, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens to those people who were, you know, set in their ways and not going to come into the office at all. It's going to be very interesting.
It is funny how just the way school children seem to have forgotten how to behave, it looks like employees have forgotten how to behave, too. Are you seeing, hearing, or writing anything about that?
Well, you know, we're hearing a lot about depression on the workplace, you know, the mental health issues, both in schools and on the workplace. And it's been a transition for some people to come back. And I think that we're going to see other things develop. Remember, a few months ago, we saw that story and we talked about it on air about peers complaining that they were working harder than their peers that were staying home. And I think that animosity is building. I think there's a real concern that you're not doing your share, you're not pulling your weight.
Talk to me about AI a little bit. What's the latest on that front?
I think school's out on this, John. I mean, it's certainly without question, everybody will agree to this, that it's going to be the greatest workforce disruption that we've seen in our lifetimes. And for education, I think it's going to be really a plus. I think that they're going to be able to personalize education and get people what they need in a much quicker way. I was talking to the DeVry people a few weeks ago, and they're looking at it. I talked to Coursera. Coursera has a chat coach that gets you like a definition of a word as you're reading, gets you the exact definition aligned with what you're studying. So education, I'm really positive on it. In terms of jobs, I'm really concerned, cautiously concerned. Everybody tells you it's going to, you know, automate out some jobs and it's going to create new jobs. But when I ask people for the job title that it's going to create, everybody says the same thing, a prompt engineer, somebody to help you ask the questions of the AI better. I think people should take they should go on the offensive right now. They should learn as many digital skills as they can so that they can ride the positive wave of AI when we know what that is and not be, you know, victimized by it.
Are you talking about learning to be a code writer, writing computer software?
So I would not say coding. I think coding will become obsolete when AI is fully implemented for the most part. But I think things like data analytics, I think things like networking, I think any kind of digital skill building that you can use, clearly data analytics is going to become important because, look, the AI that we know now, the generative AI, can produce a first draft. But we as human beings are going to have to refine our skills in editing, in fact-checking, because all AI does is pull things from the web. And there, as you and I both know, and all your listeners know, there's a lot of misinformation on the web. So you're going to need, as a human being, to be able to look at that first draft of what AI has presented and make sure that the facts are aligned. I think that's a very different skill than many workers have right now. They're used to being the ones that write the first draft, and somebody else kind of edits it and fact checks it.
Just looking at this story from Business Insider that I mentioned a moment ago, 9 jobs that want your ChatGPT experience and will pay up to $800,000. That's an outlier, mind you, but who has ChatGPT experience anyway? It was developed yesterday, so I don't think there's a rich pool of people out there that know a lot about this.
I think that's exactly right. And I think, you know, I hear strong rumors that Microsoft is going to come out this summer with a list of skills associated with using generative AI. And I think that list of skills is one that you and I are going to be looking at very carefully, because I have no idea what they are now. I mean, I know you have to be able to be comfortable working in a technology base, but I'm not at all sure, are the skills about using it for your job, or are they really about creating new versions of, you know, ChatGPT is one, Bard is another that Google is putting out. What do they want? People who can create new chat bots, and that, I'm very uncertain about that.
Yeah, I guess it depends on what side of the brain you live on. That all sounds very alien to me. If you said do something on the other side of the brain, be communicative or creative, I think I could do that, and maybe I would integrate my skills with the technology and I'd have a living, I could have a career. But if you said and be some kind of engineer that develops these things, that makes these
right.
things, I have no hope. I'm reading for Business Insider. Lasso MD, a San Diego-based health technology company, is hiring a full-time social media product manager, annual salary up to $70,000. Earlier this month, Inside.com, a social platform for business leaders in San Francisco, closed its application for a ChatGPT and AI developer, a remote full-time position, $125,000 a year. The HR firm Scratch is hiring a remote senior machine learning engineer. Think about whatever that is for a client. That'll pay up to $185,000 a year. Yeah, good luck to you all on that. This is, it's kind of...
Yeah, engineering is really the way to go. I mean, even if you want to just go to a community college and get, you know, an engineering tech degree, that's going to help you as all of this implodes, and maybe your new next employer will pay for your bachelor's or master's in engineering.
Give me one last comment on this last text. Mental health needs the benefits of physical exercise. When people work from home, they limit their movement. Workers can sit in their home all day. There is a health benefit from getting up and commuting. I thought they were going to say, being at home, you can exercise. This person says, no, you need to get out of your box. That's better for your mental health. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I just think, you know, I'm a people person, John. I think being around other people is both invigorating and healthy. You know, I don't care how lovely or not lovely they are. Just being around other people gives you it. Staying at home by yourself or with the same two or three people you live with is limiting. I think it's good for your mental health to get out and stretch and meet new people.
Read more at workingnation.com. Jane Oates is the president there. Jane, we'll call you again. Thank you as always.
John, thank you. And Pete, thanks very much.
Stephen Esposito, president of Yellowstone Wealth Management, checks in now from Lake Forest. YellowstoneWM.com is his website. Stephen, welcome to the show. What numbers are you paying attention to today?
Hi, John. Thank you for having me. The numbers are pretty good across the board. We had durable goods orders come in much better than expected. I think it was Goldman. I forgot, one of the major firms today raised GDP forecast for Q2, raised it from 1.8 to 2.2. So that was pretty good. And we actually heard Credit Suisse, as if we could do this, said there'd be no recession until 2026. I take that all with a grain of salt. But overall, the breadth of the market is very good. I like it a lot. We have a 3-to-1 advanced decline line. So that's what I've always wanted, a broad-based rally and a better breadth. And that, at least today, is so far is showing the way. And that's what I like.
2.2% GDP. Can you give me some perspective on that? How does that relate to previous years or times? Is that, how good or bad is that?
That's very good. That's actually very good, 2.2%. That doesn't signal anything like a recession. You know, a recession is defined as two consecutive quarters of negative GDP. Even at 0.1 negative is a negative quarter. And when they're raising guidance for Q2, that's pretty interesting. I think the market's reacting to that in a good way. And frankly, if you look at a lot of corporate earnings, they're not as bad as many people were forecasting. They're not coming in as terrible as people think. So there's some green shoots out there for the economy. And there's still, John, is the Fed, the fear of the Fed. What is the Fed going to do? Are they going to keep raising till something breaks? I think that's the risk out there, believe it or not. That's where we're at.
Isn't the thought, though, that the Fed's reacting to, or we should be a little more cautious because there's just always a lag time between higher interest rates and their impact on the economy?
Well, you would think that the thing is, and when Powell said this last one, is let's give it some time to filter through. I personally think they should have done that sooner. I think they've gone way farther than they needed to because a lot of the indicators are pointing, a negative potential situation. Like the leading economic indicators are down 15 months in a row. But, you know, that consumer continues to be strong. So it's a very interesting situation. The fear of what they're going to do. Many people have given the analogy that the Fed is looking in the rearview mirrors to driving down the expressway. You and I look, we're looking forward and we look on our side mirrors, and even our rearview mirrors occasionally, but we don't determine our course based on looking in the rearview mirror. And that is the biggest fear in the market. So if the Fed can slow down or halt entirely and give and see what happens, the effects of what they've already done, then I think the market would feel better about that. But that uncertainty is not there. And you also got the Europe's in a recession for all intents and purposes, and they keep raising rates. So that's not something comfortable. But on the flip side, oil's at $68 a barrel. Commodities are plunging. And a year ago, we were told it was going to 300. Huh. And now it's 68. So go figure, right?
Well, about that rearview mirror, I wonder if they're looking back at the first time when they got it wrong, when they didn't raise rates soon enough. Maybe this pause that they're in is understandably cautious. I mean, you do want the Fed to be careful, don't you?
Oh, I agree with you. But they've openly admit they're not very good at forecasting. And that in and of itself is scary. They got more data than any of us could ever hope to have. They got better insight. They've got all the credentials. And yet they've openly admitted they're not good at forecasting. Then they should take a step back and think about what they're doing and the potential effects. I just personally think you don't need to kill 2 million jobs to stop the situation, the inflation. And we're already seeing signs of it coming down dramatically across the board.
Wait a minute.
And for some reason, it's being ignored.
You killed 2 million jobs, meaning that...
You could. You could.
And that would restrict demand for goods, and therefore the prices would come down. And that's how you slay inflation, right? That's what we're talking about?
That's what we're hearing. I mean, I don't agree with that. To me, it's the equivalent of surgery on, again, I think I've used this before. It's like you have termites in one wall and you're going to tear down the whole house. I think that's the fear, whether that's what happens. And the market is showing amazing, or the economy actually shows amazing strength in the face of all that.
Well, how is it that the experts got it so wrong, be them the Fed or anybody else? I mean, I wouldn't say you're sounding like an outlier here, but plenty of other people have been talking about a recession. How is it that the smart people aren't so smart?
That's a good question. That's not adding to confidence. You know, the markets move on confidence or fear. When we're afraid of something like oil going to $300 a barrel, corporations, individuals react accordingly and batten down the hatches. I remember Jamie Dimon 13 months ago, he's one of the most respected men in the world. I think he's brilliant. Talked about a financial hurricane on the horizon. That was 13 months ago. And we're seeing a raise in GDP right now, forecasts. So that, when the smartest people in the world get it wrong, it undermines confidence. And I think that's the problem right now. So you're making a very good point. How do the smartest people in the world get it wrong? I don't know.
Is it possible that some of the strength in the economy is being fueled by people putting products on their credit cards? Are we amassing a debt problem here that these numbers don't reflect?
I don't think it's any worse than history has shown. It's not that bad, but there's something else occurring right now, what you and I've talked about on the show in the past. For the people right now are earning more return on a basic savings account than any time in the last 16 years.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money coming into the system, while at the same time, remember, most everybody's getting the highest pay rate they've ever gotten in this economy. So those are two interesting combinations that are going on right now, which is helping the consumer while there are layoffs going on. But those layoffs, when they go, they find a job in another industry. So we're in unprecedented times right now. Yes. And trying to navigate, it's not that easy, but so far, so good.
Well, I think for all of us as individuals, it's okay, what does that mean to my ability to retire someday or keep the job I've got or get a raise at the job I've got? The Dow's up a couple hundred points today. Do you think the market is generally going to trend up this year?
You know, the key definition is the market. You know, the S&P is often referred to as the market. It's 500 stocks. But if you look at, you know, the Magnificent Seven or Magnificent Ten, they've really skewed the numbers to the point where prior to just until recently, the equal weighted was negative. And if you look at most companies are negative and some pretty dramatically, especially in the financial sector, banks, insurance companies. So people look at the S&P as being the market, and I question that. I look at the breadth of the market, and I think you can have the broad market do very well while the indexes don't do anything. And that's the forecast I've heard from several people. Right now, you have the breadth of the market 3-1 positive. So you could actually have a stealth bull market in cyclicals going forward if there is no recession. And that's what I think is going to happen personally. That's how I'm deployed capital.
Well, I think I'd like to see the breadth of the market be as broad as possible. I'd like the tide to rise with all the boats, but or something like that. But put it this way, maybe I don't care. Remember, Terry Savage always says, you don't have to beat the market, just be the market. So if it's a broader market or 10 stocks that are raising the market, as long as something's lifting it up, I'm going to be okay.
I agree with that. I mean, it depends on where you're positioned. I think every investor, and what we strive for over here, is to make sure the investor is positioned where is appropriate for them on a risk tolerance basis, what their investment goals are, their age. We'd rather be miss a lot of upside than succumb to a lot of downside. So we take a different approach. And what I'm saying is that I agree with that entire concept, but it depends on what people view as the market and how you're deployed. If you're in mostly tech names and you're 65 years old, that may not be a good idea from a risk-reward perspective. So the way you're seeing the broad market, that means more people have a chance to do well than a handful who are very aggressive in their portfolios.
Well, are you telling your clients who are at or close to retirement to be as much in T-bills and I-bonds and savings accounts? Are you getting out of the market then?
No, actually, we're always pretty deployed evenly across the board, no matter how bullish I am. We may up our equity exposure. Just what we do is we shift among sectors. You know, as we've witnessed, not all sectors do well and not all sectors do bad, depending on where you're at in the market at the time and what your time horizon is. I personally think when you look at some of the cyclical names that are out there, you're talking P ratios in the single digits with very good dividends. That's very attractive to me going forward. And remember, we're heading into an election year, and no matter what politicians are around, you find that election years have a tendency to be very good years because all political parties try to do what they can to make sure everybody's happy come an election. So it's not a coincidence that look historically on how election years perform. So we're positioning our money for the end of next year as we sit here while simultaneously taking advantage of these high interest rates and money markets are spectacular. And I don't have to take risk in a money market to achieve great returns.
Yeah,
so
I understand
it's all
that,
about balance.
Okay, but then
all
give me I got to go. Give me your shortest answer to this. Is there a sector you really like or don't like right now?
I actually like the broad-based cyclicals. I like the financials a lot while looking at them. And those companies that will benefit from an economy that's going to, I think, regather some momentum next year and do well as we go into the second half of the year. So things to do with the economy, the consumer, and the financials to me look very cheap down here, very cheap.
Stephen Esposito, president of Yellowstone Wealth Management. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you, John.
Let's get you more business news now. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and this is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago home values rose 4.1% in April compared to a year ago. The city came in second to Miami on the 20-city S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller Index. Atlanta was third. For the past 5 years, Chicago's consistently been at or near the bottom of the list of big city metros. A combination of low inventory and high demand pushed home prices up overall nationwide. Miami prices were up 5.2%. The national average rose about 1% in April. Walgreens Boots Alliance shares fell as much as 10% earlier in the day after the company posted its earnings report and cut its forecast for the year. The drugstore chain says the fading COVID pandemic hurt the bottom line. Over the past year, Walgreens stock has fallen 33%. U.S. Medical Glove Company has bought the vacant Motorola building in Harvard. Community leaders hope the acquisition will bring more than 1,000 jobs to the region. The former Motorola space on Route 14 has been empty for more than 20 years. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Steve Alexander has the business of food.
Thank you. And this man is excited.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
And for good reason, especially if you or someone you know has a peanut allergy.
Very exciting. I mean, it's a very innovative technology.
And more about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado HD for being our sponsor today. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, back to our very excited guest.
My name is Dr. Matthew Greenhot. I'm a professor of pediatrics in the section of allergy and immunology at Children's Hospital of Colorado and the University of Colorado School of Medicine.
And he has potentially great news for parents and grandparents, EpiPens in hand, constantly on guard against exposures to peanuts.
More children than you realize are affected by it.
There's no cure, but, and this is why Dr. Greenhot is so excited, a French company, DBV Technologies, has created a skin patch.
It's the first non-oral potential solution for these very, very young children.
And Dr. Greenhot and his crew in Denver have been testing it on children as young as one.
And the results show that this can be done with high efficacy and exquisite safety.
So this patch, which contains a microscopic amount of peanut material, is applied to the skin and it, you know, it gently trains the child's body to tolerate it?
Perfect way to state it, yes. It retrains the body to not be as reactive to peanut.
And where is it applied?
Between the shoulder blades on the upper back.
So the child can't reach it?
Yes. And it's, you know, it's about 2 to 2.5 inches in diameter.
So far, so good.
And the fact that this is really the first non-oral technology to specifically target very, very young individuals with peanut allergy is even more exciting.
Yeah, Dr. Greenhot says a year after wearing the patch, many of the kids who could not tolerate peanuts before were able to. And as exciting as this is, he says it will likely be a few more years before the FDA will, if all goes as he expects, give its approval.
As an allergist, as a health services researcher, as a health economist, I look at this type of product and I see nothing but a bright future.
From the dairy farm to your belly, today is National Ice Cream Cake Day. It's also National Onion Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Jim Conwell's there, the Vice President of Marketing and Communications at the Greater Chicago Food Depository. NASCAR's in town, as we all know, and they're hosting a fundraising food event for the Greater Chicago Food Depository. It's going to be tomorrow night at 6 o'clock until 9 o'clock. It's going to be an exclusive fundraising dinner at Steak 48 on North Wabash. Thanks for joining us, Jim. Boy, this sounds like a great event for you guys.
Thank you. Yes, we are immensely grateful to the NASCAR Foundation and the folks at Steak 48 for using this opportunity of the events and festivities this week in Chicago to give back and support our mission to end hunger. The Greater Chicago Food Depository is the food bank that serves Chicago and Cook County, and the need is elevated. We certainly can use the help to put more meals on the tables of Chicagoans who need them.
Why do you say the need is elevated?
Well, food insecurity remains above pre-pandemic levels. Northwestern economists that we work with estimate that right now about 1 in 5 households across the Chicago metro area is at risk of food insecurity, meaning that they struggle to access and afford all the food that they and their family need. And it's driven by, you know, the after effects of the pandemic. And then inflation and elevated grocery prices over the last year set a lot of families behind. Add on top of that the end of emergency federal SNAP benefits. So anyone who receives benefits on a link card saw their monthly disbursement roll back this spring. So we're seeing more people turning up at food pantries across our network because they're really having a hard time making ends meet each month.
How do I do this event, and what do I do if I go tomorrow night?
Well, the event, as you mentioned, is 6 o'clock at Steak 48 in River North on Wabash. More information, including how to purchase tickets and get involved, is on the NASCAR Foundation's website. That's nascarfoundation.org/Chicago. I believe there's going to be the opportunity for folks who attend to you know, see and meet some of the NASCAR talent who's in town, but also just to to celebrate the food that makes our city special and give back to a mission that's making sure everyone in Chicago has food to eat.
What do you need the most? Is it money? You need jars of peanut butter? What's your pitch here, Jim?
That's a great question. Right now, what the Greater Chicago Food Depository needs most is financial donations. The increase in food prices over the last year, year and a half, means that we're spending more money on food, and we provide that food to a network of 800 organizations and programs across the community at no cost to them. So we're spending more on food to keep up with the need and make sure that food pantries and soup kitchens and meal programs are stocked. So financial contributions can be made directly at chicagosfoodbank.org. That helps quite a bit, but we also need volunteers. So if someone wants to volunteer with us or with one of our partners, they can also find information on our website, chicagosfoodbank.org.
I'm going to repeat that, chicagosfoodbank.org and nascarfoundation.org/Chicago. nascarfoundation.org/Chicago. You want to go hobnob with some fancy folks, get a terrific meal, and make a donation that way. All good. Okay, Jim.
It all makes a difference.
You betcha. I'm sure it will.
Thank you so much.
Jim Conwell is the Vice President of Marketing and Comms over there at the Food Depository.